The KM Football Podcast. All the latest reaction and analysis from the KM Sports team. Listen every week and click subscribe on iTunes.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and I'm once again joined in the studio by Steve Turvett of the KM Sports Desk. Our special guest needs no introduction, but I've written one anyway, so I'll read it out as we go. We're joined by a striker who's been banging in goals everywhere he's gone for more than a decade. After a dozen league outings for Gillingham, he won two titles in successive seasons with Dover before moving to Tunbridge. A Conference South Golden Boot winner at Longmead, his next destination was Maidstone, where he won the Ryman League Premier Division title for a third time with a third different club. He scored twice to knock Stevenage out of the FA Cup while at Maidstone and is currently plying his trade with another Kent club in Margate. It's a warm welcome to Franny Collin. Good to see you, Franny. Thanks for coming in to see us. So let's start at the weekend. Margate trip to Haringey, the leaders in the Ryman Premier Division, and a 1-0 defeat, really late goal as well.
Yeah, we was really disappointed with Saturday, to be honest. They went down to 10 men pretty early, and we didn't really do anywhere near enough in the final third to take advantage of it, and unfortunately they got the goal at the end, and in fairness to them, they were a good side and they probably deserved the 3 points at the end of the day, but for us, we were disappointed in ourselves Saturday.
Tell us a bit about the season at Margate, because it's fair to say it hasn't gone as well as any of you would have wanted. Yeah. Why do you think it's been such a struggle for the Gate this season?
It was no secret the budget got cut quite a bit in the summer, but saying that, we've got some good players at the club. We've got a very small squad, and we've been hit with injuries. Alex Brown, Tom Winter, big players for us. We seem to have not been able to hit a consistent run of form. We seem to have picked up a couple of good results. We have struggled this season, as you know, our team on paper should be a lot higher than it is. And we've underperformed, really. It's as simple as that. We can't really put our finger on it. All we can do is keep working hard and try and push ourselves up the table.
Is it just about staying up? You know, have you got higher aspirations to get into mid-table, or do you look at it and say, look, we've just got to make sure we're in the division next season?
Well, we're in a dogfight, really. We shouldn't be where we are, but we are where we are. So, obviously, first and foremost is to not get involved in that dogfight come April. But, I mean, we shouldn't be looking at teams below us. We should be looking at, you know, pushing up the table. We shouldn't be anywhere near where we are, but we are. So, we'd definitely be looking up, not down. And if we're still in a position come April, I'd be, you know, very disappointed in ourselves.
As Matt said, it's a division that you know really well. You've got out of it with three different clubs.
Yeah.
How's this level of football changed over the time that you've been playing?
I'd say it's professionalised a lot more than maybe sort of 7-8 years ago. There's a hell of a lot of turnover of players coming out of league clubs for various reasons, and filtering down into the Ryman Bostic League as it is now. And the pace of the game's a lot quicker. That's the definite. Teams are a lot more organised. Teams do things the right way. And I think you notice that when you watch the FA Cup games now in the earlier rounds, the games are a lot more competitive than they were maybe 8 or 9 years ago. So from that point of view, it's a lot quicker. Yeah, a lot quicker. And like I say, just a lot more professionalised.
Can I just rewind many years or several years to the back to the start of your career? We know that you started off at Gillingham, but what was your pathway to getting into the club and getting into men's football, first of all?
Well, as a schoolboy, I was at Aston Villa, and I got told at 15 I wasn't getting a YTS. So I trialled at various clubs, Palace, Charlton. Didn't really get anywhere, so I made the decision with my parents that I was going to stay on at school. Signed at Chatham Town, and it was probably a month or so into the season at Chatham that Gillingham had come in for me. By that time I'd started my A-levels, and I don't think my mum would have been too happy if I'd have packed him in after a couple of months or so. So Darren Eyre was the head of youth at the time, and we had a meeting, and he decided that he was okay with me continuing at Chatham. So I was there for the 2 years I was doing my A-levels, playing for them, playing men's football from 16 to 18, and I was with Gillingham reserve games on a Wednesday afternoon, and it went from there. So it was quite unique for me. I'd never done a proper YTS, didn't have to clean the boots and the changing rooms or anything like that, but I'd come into Gills at 18, having already played probably 80 games in senior football. So I think from that point of view, I was more ready for senior football, so to speak.
How did you find the standard at Chatham at the time then? Was it, I mean, obviously you're 16, 17 year old, and you're playing against, you know, grown men who want to kick lumps at you, presumably, you know? Was that the case? Was that how you remember
it? Was it? I mean, I remember my debut was away at Histon, who I think it was the old Doc Martens League then. And Histon from there went into the conference within a couple of years, so they were, at the time, was a good side. And I remember 5 minutes into the game, like, so I just turned 16 as well, and they had a 6'4" centre half. His goal kick's come forward, I've not even really made a change, and he's won the header, and then, as he's won it, he's just followed through with his elbow on the side of my head, and it's the first time I'd had anything like that. And it was, I guess, his way of saying welcome to senior football. And it's something you have to quickly get used to, but it was a good league for Chatham back then. I had a look at a programme the other day, actually. There were some Kings Lynn, Histon, Salisbury, Eastleigh. There were some good sides in there at the time. So it was, yeah, good standard.
It toughened you up early on, I guess, in that
It toughened me up, yeah. I think it was a month in, again, I got another elbow to the side of the head, and it was the first time I had to have stitches. So, yeah, it was thrown in the deep end a little bit.
Did all that stuff help prepare you for when you started to break through at Jules?
I think so, yeah. I think, obviously, the standard between League One and Doc Martens is football-wise is massive, but it's still, you know, it's getting used to, it's men playing football to earn their living, to, you know, pay for their mortgage, so it's a lot different to what you see in academy football. So, yeah, it definitely toughened me up. Like I say, the standard's a lot different, but in terms of the competitive element of it, it was, you know, it was very much the same.
And coming into the environment of the first team squad at Jules, there were some big characters there, weren't they? Likes of Neil Harris and Michael Flynn. What was that like as a youngster, you know, trying to establish yourself and get into that environment?
I was very quiet as a youngster, and walked into that changing room. Like you say, Flynn, he was there, Alan Powton was there, Mark Saunders were there, people who have been around the club a long time. And it's quite intimidating, to be honest, when you walk in there as a youngster, and you almost just keep your head down and don't speak unless you're spoken to, and just try and work hard. I wasn't really one for joining in the banner because I didn't basically want to have it ripped out of me, to be honest.
Is it a thing where you feel like you need to prove yourself to those older guys?
Yeah, definitely. I think the first thing you need to do is earn their respect, but doing that on the training ground, basically. And I still speak to Pouts, you know, quite often nowadays. Chris Hope, another one who was the captain at the time, speak to him now and again. But yeah, I think the main thing is to just show that you can compete at that level when you come in, and you're not out of your depth, really.
What do you remember about your first team debut, being given that chance and then scoring as well?
Yeah, I remember it. I remember I scored in the, I don't know what it's called now, it's called the LDV Vans at the time. I think it's the Football League,
like
trophy.
The Johnston's Paint,
yeah, Johnston's Paint, yeah. Trophy. Yeah, we played Crawley. And I remember coming on, and Matty Jarvis was obviously establishing the first team at the time, but I played youth and reserve football with him. And I remember coming on and playing up front with Matty for half hour or so, and it was him that slid me through for the goal. And it was actually a tiny crowd for Jules there at the time. They only opened with the one stand, so it was a quarter of what they'd get in the league game. But it must have been 1,600 there, which, to me, when the goal went in, it felt like I'd scored in front of 30,000 from the sound of it.
Big deal,
yeah,
for
it was
you,
massive,
it?
Yeah. I mean, with all due respect to Chatham, I'd been used to 200 people, so, yeah, it was massive for me.
Matt Jarvis, was he a player that you could see at that point, you know, his real quality here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd played with Matty through the youths and reserves, so everybody had seen it. And it was good to just watch him from the bench, from the stands, and it was almost a case of priest. Whenever he picked the ball up, you could almost look around the stadium and see everybody sort of get off their seat as soon as he picked it up. Mm. He's been unfortunate with injuries. I spoke to Matty not long ago, and I know he's been struggling, but he's an England international, so I don't think anyone would swap their career with his.
No, not bad. And what was it like, you know, the next couple of years at Jules? Because presumably your hope at that point was, you know, I'm going to fight my way into the team and, yeah, and make a professional career here. How did it go from that point?
Obviously, it was under Neil Cooper, who I initially broke into the side and had a good run of games. And unfortunately, remember the Burscoe defeat in the FA Cup, and he lost his job not long after that. And I think I had a spell where maybe one or two sub appearances. And if I'm honest, from January onwards, didn't really feature at all in the first team. My contract was up that summer, so it was a bit of a shock really when Ronnie Jepson offered me a new deal for the final. I was expecting to just be released. I think there was two or three other young lads that got released that summer, and I was expecting to just be one of them. But if I'm honest, my second year at Jules, I don't think I featured a great deal, maybe two or three times all season. And I had an agent at the time. There was a couple of opportunities for me to go and play League Two conference football. And probably it would have been a better idea, looking back now, to have moved on and played more in senior football than, as it turned out, maybe just sort of flitting in and around the squad and not really getting much of a look in.
Was you advised by your agent then, is what you're saying, to stay at Jules or to not go out on loan?
No, not necessarily. It was more of a case of, in fairness, we were both expecting me to not get a new deal. I don't know the discussions between the agent and Ronnie at the time. I don't know if there was a change of heart by Ronnie or what it was, but I wasn't expecting to be offered a new contract. So it was more of a case, I think, of he was sort of getting some ideas or deals together for me as a where I could go next. And then the new deal came up, and obviously I'm a local lad, and I wanted to break into the first team and prove that I could play there. So it was my decision to stay, and I wasn't looking to go anywhere, but obviously, as it turned out, it was probably the wrong decision, really.
Can it be sort of soul-destroying that season? You say you only sort of played three times or so. Did you find yourself quite down in that?
Yeah.
You're on the edge of everything, I guess.
Yeah, I did. And I think it was more of a case because I'd asked a couple of times to go out on loan. And as it turned out, I was fourth-choice striker at the time. And it didn't seem that anyone was getting injured, so I never really moved from fourth-choice striker. And if it was maybe one player got injured. So every time I went to speak to him, I'd get, I need you on the bench in case anything happens. And as it happened, nothing did happen, so I never really got a look in. But I did ask a couple of times to go out on loan, and it for one reason or other, it just never happened for me that year.
What was your relationship like with Ronnie Jepson?
I mean, yeah, I got on quite well with Ronnie. He's... I think, as everybody knows, he's quite intimidating. He says it how it is. But as I say, I just tried to work hard and keep my head down and concentrate on my football. And I think, in fairness, he probably did appreciate that side of me. But I never complained about it. I'd asked to go out on loan, but it was never, I want to leave, I want to go elsewhere. It was just, I wanted to play football. But like I say, I didn't really play enough that season.
So was there a point when that season you accepted that, actually, this is going to go down a different path and I've got to start planning for something different next season?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, like I say, I think I'm probably got to February time and I maybe two sub-appearances and a cup game all season. And obviously, it's not enough. I was 18, 19 at the time. For me, it was nowhere near enough. I needed to accept that I was going to have to move on if I wanted to play properly.
And the next move was Hesse, wasn't it, Dover?
Yeah, there was another one that came up quite late as well. I was actually set to go to Scotland. I was actually going to Livingston, which would have been at the time the league below the ESPL. And Hesse got the Dover job quite late that summer. And obviously he took Darren with him. And I got to remember getting a phone call. I was sat in the living room. I just got back from my holiday. And I got a phone call off of Darren saying, would I be interested in coming to Dover? At the time, I thought, I'd quick look on the internet, see what level Dover were playing at. And at the time, it was Ryman South. And my first instinct was absolutely no chance, to be honest. And then he said, Essie's took over as manager. And I sort of took a step back. John Wallace had just signed. He was a good mate of mine.
Was with you at Jules, wasn't he?
Was with me at Jules, yeah. I took a step back and I thought, all of a sudden, if Essie's managed in the Championship and took Jules to the highest they've ever finished and he's willing to drop down to Dover to manage, then you know it's not too low a level for me to go and play my football. So I had a chat with Hesse and went down to see the chairman. Obviously it's a huge club in non-league terms, and decided it was the best thing for me.
And what happened over the next 3 years? Do you feel that vindicated your decision to say no to moving up to Scotland and yes to Ryman South? And what happened after that?
Yeah, I mean, the Scottish opportunity would have been a good way of me staying in full-time football. But, I mean, in terms of what I went on to achieve at Dover and the experience I gained, we got two promotions in 3 years, and I think we finished runner-up in the Conference South in the first year there. So, first and second in 3 years. It was definitely the right idea.
Obviously, it's not just about playing football, though, isn't it? When you leave full-time, you've got to find a trade or a day job to go along with that. Did you have anything lined up at that point, or did you start from scratch?
I did, to be honest. When I left Jules, which would have been in the May, agreed with Dover in the July, I pretty much done what I think 99% of young pros do when they come out of league football, and that's do absolutely nothing other than train a couple of nights a week and sit on the sofa all day feeling a bit sorry for themselves. But my dad's a plasterer, my granddad's a plasterer, my uncle's a plasterer, my granddad had his own plastering firm. And there come a point, I remember it, about October time, dad come in from work and I was lying on the sofa with a cup of tea, and I'd been there pretty much all day, and he just blew his top at me and said, "It's time you need to come to work, you need to get off the sofa," which was the right thing to do. I sort of held on to the fact that I'm trying to get myself back in the league, which I was, but I think there's too many players that drop into non-league and aren't prepared to go to work or get themselves a proper job and sort of hang on to the hope of I'll get back into the league one day, which obviously, you know, hopefully it does happen, but I was sort of pushed into plastering more than anything else.
How long did you hang on to that hope that it might still happen for me?
I think realistically, I joined Dover at 19, maybe at 22, 23, started to think if it doesn't happen now, perhaps it's not going to. And I think it was a year I won the Golden Boot with Tunbridge. I think I ended up with about 36 goals that season. And there was a couple of sniffs to go on trial at clubs. But at the time I was 23, 24 maybe, and wasn't really interested in going trialing at places. So when nothing happened after that, I think that was the point I realised that it's not going to happen now.
Mm. I mean, that was a great season for you, wasn't it, when you won the Golden Boot at Tunbridge? But and you, as you say, you know, everything you touched was going in.
Yeah.
Absolutely on fire. Were you surprised then that you didn't actually have any firm offers from people higher up?
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple of conference offers, and but there wasn't anything full-time that was concrete. There was, we'd like you to come in for a couple of weeks during pre-season, things like that. But there wasn't anything, and when I looked at it, there was a lot of the players who'd won the Golden Boot in the three or four years previous to that had all gone into league football. So, you know, for whatever reason, nobody fancied me at the time, but yeah, I just got on with it.
Was you tempted by those offers in the conference then?
They were financially brilliant offers, but not footballing-wise, really. There were offers that I could have gone and earned a lot more money. So financially, yeah, it would have been a lot better. But there wasn't anything that appealed. I was really enjoying it under Tommy at Tunbridge. I was playing a lot, scoring a lot of goals, knew a lot of the boys. And I had no real interest in moving unless it was going to be for a league deal.
Whereabouts are we talking? Would it have involved relocation for you as well?
It would have been one was Eastleigh, which would have, yeah, would have probably meant maybe relocating closer towards that way. And at the time, they wasn't even full-time. It was a case of a couple of mornings, a couple of evenings. So it wasn't, you know, an inspiring deal sort of thing.
Do you stand by that decision to not go?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's all what-ifs that could have happened. But, yeah, for me, I was, like I say, I was thoroughly enjoying it at Tunbridge, and I had no intention of going unless it was going to be a good offer in the Football League that I could crack on with.
What was it about Tunbridge? It just seemed like a perfect fit for you, having had the three good years at Dover. Hesse said he was going to let you go and have a fresh challenge.
Yeah.
Working with Tommy, he seemed to create a great environment. And you look at that team that you had at that point and the players and what they've gone on to do since, it was a real good squad you had.
I think it was just the changing room, and that's all really down to Tommy. In fairness to him, he's probably one of the few managers who looks at players, but he looks more at what they'll bring to a changing room. And if he identifies a player but doesn't think it'll fit in with the rest of the boys, no matter how good they are, he doesn't sign them, simple as that. So everybody there was going out every week for Tom, basically. And he created that atmosphere whereby people enjoyed turning up for training. They couldn't wait for the games to come around. I think we finished just outside the playoffs in our first year up in that league. And Tom has to take most of the credit for that, really.
When you first joined Tunbridge, how often did Tommy meet you before you signed on? Or, you know, if you're saying, did he get to know you as the person, or did he do his homework and talk to other people?
I think he might have done his homework and speaking to a couple. I actually met Tom once and then signed, and it was probably the weirdest signing in non-league history. I signed in Butmore Park at the go-kart track on the bonnet of a car that wasn't even Tom's. He just said, he asked me where I was living. Tom's from over Cuxton Way. He said, "I'll meet you at the top of Bluebell halfway. If that's right, I'll bring the forms." And I said, "Yeah, that's fine." And I remember Tom got dropped off there and I drove up there. We met halfway in the middle of a car park and he just pulled the forms out and we literally signed over the bonnet of a van. Don't know whose van it was, but that was it, done.
You didn't take much persuading then, is that?
No, I mean, we'd spoke on the phone, obviously everything was finalised, but I'd met Tom once, and then, like I say, signed in a go-kart track car park.
One of the big things at Tunbridge was your set pieces, obviously taking penalties, but free kicks as well. It just seemed that, you know, you were hitting them from wherever and they were flying in, and that particularly that season you got the golden boot.
Yeah.
Was that the season you most enjoyed in your career?
I'd say individually, yeah. We obviously didn't win anything as a team that year, but I think over the course of one season, personally, the way I was playing, I felt I was going into every... I felt I'd score in every game. So personally, I'd say, yeah, that was my best season, yeah, definitely.
I understand that you and Tommy have got a slight difference of opinion on the best way to take a penalty. That continues to this day. Can you just explain that?
Tom had this thing. I remember missing a pen for Tom. And I always state it to this day, if the keeper makes a save, it's a good save. Tom has this thing that if a goalkeeper saves a pen and you haven't gone high with your pen, it's a bad pen. So I can be watching the game Sunday, Super Sunday game between Arsenal and Chelsea. If a pen goes in and the goalkeeper saves it, I can guarantee within 2 minutes Tom will text me saying, "Should have lifted it, son." And he says it every single time we meet each other.
Let's be clear, he wasn't a prolific penalty scorer in his
time. I don't think so. Tom just had the idea that, which is thoroughly right, if you put the ball in the top corner, the goalkeeper's not going to save it. But it's a lot harder said than done, really.
And did you change your penalty technique as a result of Tommy's badgering at you?
No, not particularly. I think I was more concerned at putting penalties over the bar than...
That's the fear, but, I guess, yeah.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I have put a couple of pins high, but I haven't got a set way of where I like to put them.
Just in case any goalkeepers are listening.
Exactly, yeah.
What are the biggest challenges about being a part-time footballer, balancing your job, your home life, your football, everything?
It's exactly that. It's balancing your work and your football. For instance, tomorrow we go down to Lewis. It's not as bad for me, but a few of our boys that are more sort of London bound, it's a hell of a commitment. You're going to be getting in one in the morning, got to get up for work the next day, take a half day on of the day of the game. So it's not easy, but at the end of the day, if everybody does it because they enjoy their football, I mean, it's like I say, it's a sacrifice that the league boys don't really have to make. But yeah, if you didn't love your football, you wouldn't be doing it.
It was always going to take a good offer to sort of tempt you away from Tunbridge. You'd stayed loyal for a couple of years, but then it was Maidstone who came along. Presumably the fact that they were climbing up the leagues, they'd moved back to the Gallagher, it was a real attractive proposition at that time. You wouldn't have just left for anybody?
No, I mean, I pretty much made my mind up that I was going to be moving on from Tunbridge maybe a month or so from the end of the season. I remember speaking to Tom after the last game, and I hadn't actually spoke to Maidstone at that point. I spoke to a couple of others, but not Maidstone. And I said, "Tom, I think I had 3 years there now. I feel like I maybe need to move on." I don't think I had a great second half to the season in that final year there. We struggled a bit as a team. And then I was on holiday, and I was almost going to sign for Dover again. But then I got a call off Jay at Maidstone. Lee Walgan was going there as well, was at Tunbridge with me, and I came back, had the chat, got the tour of the new stadium, which was obviously at the time, you know, amazing. The fact that I was getting 2,500 people every week, 15 minutes away from me as well, everything just seemed to be a perfect fit.
And the manager, Jay, you know, has to be the right person to go and play for. How big an influence was he in you going there, and how much did you enjoy playing for him?
Yeah, I mean, Jay was quite new. I think it was only his second full season as manager, but I'd played against Jay a number of times as a player. Been kicked by him numerous times. So I was actually a bit surprised when he wanted to speak to me with a chat, because I actually thought he hated me, the amount of times he'd kicked me during games.
It must have been a backhanded compliment.
Possibly, yeah, but not some of the stuff he used to say at me after he kicked me. But I met with Jay, and Jay is a laid back person, as everyone knows who meets him, and he created the same sort of atmosphere Tommy had created at Tunbridge. It was everybody in the change room at Maidstone got on well, and Jay was a big part of that. He'd come on our nights out together and things like that. Jay was a big factor in me joining Maidstone.
And the fact that he's a laid back guy, you're a pretty laid back character as well. Was that an important thing?
I think so, yeah. I think so. I mean, Tommy's a laid back. I think most of the managers I've played under are quite similar to me, really. I don't think personally I'd be one that reacts to the shouters and screamers as much as some players do, because I am a laid-back kind of person. But yeah, definitely, I think me and Jay sort of, we got on really well from that point of view.
Is it ever something that people have sort of held against you? I remember Ewan Roberts, who was at Jules, he was an older player, you were a younger player, he was a pundit on TV when Maidstone played Wrexham in the Cup, and he questioned your attitude as a younger player at Jules. What did you make of those comments?
Yeah, to be honest, I remember getting so much stick off of that, because obviously the game was, I think it was BBC Wales, it was shown, and all my mates were watching it, and all I kept getting was little videos of what Ewan Roberts had been saying. And I was quite surprised, to be honest, because I never actually played with Ewan. Like I say, I didn't do a proper scholarship at Gillingham, and Ewan was at the club when they was in the Championship, and I think I maybe played 45 minutes up front with Ewan in a reserve game once, but that was as far as it went. But
so it was never something where you...
No, I mean, I never trained.
And he said, look, you've got to sort
yourself
out.
Yeah, no, I'd never trained. I mean, maybe he spoke to somebody and they'd given that opinion or something like that, but I'd never actually trained with you, and I'd never, I think, like I say, maybe met him once before that. So, you know, it's his opinion. I'm not going to hold any grudges.
And that was the round after Stevenage.
Yeah, I mean,
For all the league successes, the championships, the playoff games that you've won, that must rank right up there, you know, when you think back to that night, what are the memories?
Yeah, because for me as well, it's the first time since I've gone in the league I've ever got to the first round, and I think at the time I was 27, and I thought I've had about 7 or 8 years at this and got nowhere near getting in the first round. But I remember we went there on the first game that we drew 0-0, and played really well actually, and probably I'd missed a chance late in the game. I'd got put through 1-1, and sort of hit it straight at the keeper, and it was a lot of people thought it was our big chance to go through that day. So the Thursday night, I remember turning up. It was the first time we'd played on TV as well, most of us. I remember turning up and we couldn't get in the car park because of all of the cameras and the vans and everything there. Walked through the changing rooms, getting videoed, and it was a whole new thing for it. All of the players. I think there maybe only one or two had played TV before. And it was brilliant. I think the crowd was actually a little bit smaller than we'd normally got because of all the TV bits that was there. But the atmosphere was, it was amazing. And obviously I got the first goal very early in the game. And it settled us down a lot, because I think there was a lot of nerves out there for us, and it sort of did settle us down a little bit. And I think when you watch the game back, actually, other than a spell sort of half hour in the game, we actually created a lot of chances, and it wasn't really a surprise win in the end. We deserved to win the game.
I mean, when you go back to that night, I mean, 5 minutes to go, it's 1-1, isn't it? You're heading towards extra time, and penalties maybe even further along the line. You think, what was going through the mind at that point? Just thinking, oh, just give me one chance, just give me one chance.
Yeah, it was a case, because like I say, we had created quite a few chances in that second half, and I was almost waiting for one to fall for me. And I remember Ben Greenough picking the ball up, going past a couple of players, and I just managed to get myself in between the two centre-halves, and it fell perfectly for me. It was one of those, if I hadn't tucked it away, I'd have been getting dug out by everyone. But obviously, to see it going, it was 5 minutes to go. And then Jay took me off about 30 seconds later.
I mean, obviously, that was the fact that you want to hold on to the 2-1 and you get the applause, I guess, to the crowd and everything. And then at the end of the final whistle, everyone's on the pitch, weren't they?
It was amazing. I mean, to be honest, Jay said to me on the side that he didn't know I'd scored the goal. He thought it was Jay May. Because he sat down and he went, he said something about Jay's heat. He went, was Jay offside for his goal? And I looked at him and I thought he was taking the mick a little bit. I went, what do you mean? He went, Jay's header. A few of the people were saying he was offside. I went, it was my header. He went, oh, was it? You scored? But I went, yeah. He went, I wouldn't have took you off then. But obviously, we managed to hold on. And it was brilliant. It was the first pitch invasion I've been involved in, other than being on the receiving end of ones before. But it was the first pitch invasion after a big win. It was brilliant for the club. It was massive.
What did you make of all the attention, all the publicity you got as well? I mean, you were out the next morning getting your papers and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I found it a bit uncomfortable, to be honest. I missed all of the celebrations in the change room after, the champagnes, the singing. I missed the whole thing. I think I had about 3 or 4 different interviews that I was getting pulled over here and everywhere to do. I wasn't involved in any of the celebrations, really. All the memories I got on it is what people sent me in videos.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a bit of a shame, I guess, really, from your point of view now.
Well, a little bit, maybe, but you just go with the flow at the time.
You wouldn't swap it, I guess, for scoring 2 goals in the FA Cup.
No, no chance.
Jay, it'd been such a massive part of taking Maidstone eventually all the way to the National League by the time that you'd left the club. What did you make of their decision to let him go earlier this season?
I was obviously shocked by it, as I think most people were. But I mean, I think the club they're an ambitious club. They want to be going for the Football League. They want to get back into that level of football. But yeah, maybe, you know, after what Jay's done for the club over the course of his time there, well, I think it's been proven it was probably too early to get rid of Jay. And Jay is probably the best manager I've worked under in terms of what he's got out of a group of players. So I've got no doubts he'll go back into management and be a success again. And it is just a bit of a shame, really, that they got rid of him when they did.
What is it about Jay that, you know, he gets that little bit extra out of a player?
I think he's got a really clever, unique way of... he has now, actually, because he's been their manager. He's not that long been retired as a player, so he knows exactly what it's like to be a player. So he's got a unique way of being close to the players, but also not too close that players are willing to sort of take the mick a little bit with it. And he's just got, yeah, he's got a really nice blend of how he manages and how he's your mate, but also you know full well that... there's boundaries that you can't cross with him.
You know who's the boss.
Exactly that, yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, did he lose his rag with you a few times? Would you know it when he did?
He wasn't ever really one for losing his rag. You knew when he had the ump, but you could know it just by looking at his face more than anything else. He didn't really need to say a lot. But I think because of the relationship he had with the players, you came in, you knew you'd let him down, and he didn't need to have a go at you because you was gutted you'd let him down because of how much he does for you.
I'm intrigued, having talked about your time at Tunbridge and how much you enjoyed playing for Tommy. He's just gone back in at Ashford. Is he someone you'd like to play for again before you finish your career?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I spoke to Tom as soon as he got the job, congratulated him on it, and Alex O'Brien is number two. I speak to quite a bit as well. Yeah, I mean, you know, one day, why not? He's, you know, like I said, I played probably my best football under Tommy. Still got on really well with him now. Still meet him up time to time for a drink and a chat. So, yeah, he'll definitely be a success. He's been a success, really, wherever he's gone.
I know one thing I was going to talk to you about, Franny, was the way that position-wise, where managers have used you in different positions out wide at times, not playing necessarily as the main striker.
Yeah.
How do you feel about when you have to do a job out wide for the team? Is that the way you look at it, that you're doing something for the team? And where do you think your best position is?
I'm centre forward. I've always been a centre forward. But I think this season's a good example of it. I haven't played up front this season. I've been playing out wide. And yeah, it is a case of that. You're doing a job for the team. Like I say, at Margate, we've got such a tight, small number of players available to us that players do have to do a job in various different roles. And you can't always play where you want to play. So it's a case of either get on with it and do a job for the team or go and sit on the sidelines.
Yeah, I mean, you spoke before about Jay May. I mean, was your preference to play with a big...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think 4-4-2 or getting two centre-forwards in your team seems to be dying out of the game now. I've played with Jay. All of the forwards I've played with seem to be the bigger target man type, and I've always enjoyed and scored a majority of my goals that way. But like I said, I think the game's moving on a little bit now. Everyone's playing a 4-3-3 or there's a one centre forward nowadays, and it's just the way the game's going a little bit.
Do you find it frustrating almost in a way now that you maybe when you're not down the middle you don't get the same number of chances for sure?
Yeah, of course you don't. No, you don't get the same number of chances. Of course you don't. But you get a lot more of the ball. You're involved in the game. Sometimes when you're up front, you are a bit of a passenger, particularly if your team's under the cosh a little bit. But it's playing football, and whether I'm playing left back, left mid, in goal, whatever, it's just getting out on the pitch.
I guess the goal stats, I mean, they're lower now than what they were previous seasons when you're playing down the middle. I mean, is that something that, you know, you look at the number of goals you score and you've got to remember, hold on a minute, I'm not a striker, I'm not a main striker anymore, you know?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, like I said, I'm not massively one for the stats side of things. I can tell you, like, when I was younger, exactly how many goals, assists, everything else. But as you get older, you seem to mature a little bit maybe and think more of what's more beneficial for the team. I'd probably score more playing down the middle, but I'm enjoying what I'm doing at the minute.
Every player will pick up injury over the course of their career. Did you not have a particularly unusual one with an animal?
I did, yeah. Yeah, it was my final season at Maidstone. pre-season. I was at work. We were just about to play our final pre-season game. I've gone to a job, got given the directions for a job, turned up at the house, got the key for the house, and I'd opened the wrong door to the room I shouldn't have gone in, and a bull mastiff was in there and it bit me on the side of my leg. I had to go and get it, got infected, I had to go and get it all cleaned out and whatever, but yeah, I missed the last pre-season game and had to play strapped up for a little while so it didn't get infected.
I'm sure the boys and the fans were very sympathetic and understanding.
Yeah, no, got absolutely hammered for that. I still do now.
Really?
Yeah, I went to a Maidstone game last year and I don't know how they'd spotted me in the stands, but someone started singing Who Let the Dogs Out and it kicked off again.
Right, let's look back over the weekend's football, and a few of these, obviously, your former clubs, Franny, that we've already spoken about in some detail. Gillingham sit just 1 point, but 3 places above the League One relegation zone after Saturday's dismal 3-0 defeat at home to Walsall. The FA Cup fourth round tie at Swansea this weekend will prove a timely distraction. I mean, still follow the Gills, Franny, obviously, living locally?
Yeah, I still follow them. Know Steve really well. I'm really good mates with his son, Mark, so keep a keen eye on how they're doing. And my dad's actually going to the game this weekend. He's travelling to Wales with a few of his mates. They're all going to watch it. So hopefully they can get a good result.
Great result in the previous round to knock out Cardiff and now another Welsh team, of course.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was amazing. I think it was the first time I can remember putting Match of the Day and Jules were the first game on it, which was brilliant. It was brilliant for the town. Yeah, and it was great to see him doing well.
OK, on to the National League action then. Ebbsfleet continued their impressive form by beating leaders Leighton Orient 2-0 at Stonebridge Road. Next up for the Fleet is Sutton away. Steve, that was obviously the game you covered at the weekend. Your thoughts on that one?
Well, Fleet's best performance of the season by quite a distance, up against team top of the league. Leighton Orient, you know, really decent side, brought about 1,500 fans down, so it just had that feel of a proper big game. And just little moments went Fleet's way. Jack King sweeping one into the top corner in the first half. Nathan Ashmore, again, another player who had his best game of the season, made some incredible saves. How he kept one out from Macaulay Bonn, I don't know. I asked him after the game. He didn't know how he kept it out. It was just one of those games where he was unbeatable, really. And then a worldy free kick from Chris Bush, to use the sort of football terminology. I don't think he'll ever hit a free kick better than that. 28, 30 yards out, left foot, kissed the inside of the post and went in, just as Orient were maybe looking like they were going to get back in the game, and that killed them off, really. So, yeah, big win, and they're in such good form at the moment, I think you'd be a fool to write them off for the playoffs.
OK, Dover somehow held on to a 1-1 draw with Bromley at Crabble. That's after playing with 9 men for about half an hour of that game. Good to see, though, that Kevin Locko's red card has since been rescinded for his part in that incident. Andy Hessenthaler's men travelled to Havant at the weekend, like Dover, there on 32 points and sit just outside the drop zone. Franny, what do you make of Hessen, his return to Dover? They say never go back, but obviously he's proved a good decision so far.
Yeah, it's working out very well, yeah. I mean, I spoke to Darren. He lives just round the corner from me, actually. Spoke to him when the job was coming up and wished him luck. I'm not really one for believing that never go back sort of thing. But, he was amazing for the club first time round. And I think it was a good move by the chairman, Jim, there, because it gave him a bit of a feel-good factor again, which is probably what they needed after the start they'd had to the season. And they kicked right on since. So they look like, touch wood, they're going to be nicely safe.
Yeah, they're on the upward curve for sure, but unfortunately well and truly in the drop zone at the minute. Another one of your former clubs, Maidstone, soundly beaten 3-0 at home to Dagenham on Saturday. 6 points from safety. Now the Stones travel to leaders Leighton Orient this weekend. Do you fear for them in their current predicament?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately it's a bit of a rut they're in at the minute, and it's hard to get out of it, and it's never easy when you're down there. Every game seems to be a cup final. Hopefully they can turn it around and put a run of games together, but it's not looking too great at the minute, unfortunately.
Carry on. National League South, Dartford dropped back out of the playoff places after a late 2-1 defeat at Chelmsford, 2 goals late on for the hosts in that one. Welling, meanwhile, up to fifth following their 1-0 win over Eastbourne, although the biggest talking point of PVR this week was the major cuts made to manager Steve King's budget. Welling visit Billericay on Saturday while Dartford host Concord. Franny, I mean, you spoke about budgets being cut earlier. How disconcerting is that for a dressing room when that kind of thing happens, you know, especially mid-season?
Yeah, it is. I mean, whether you're fighting for promotion or fighting relegation, a budget comes in and two or three players have to move on, and it can be a bit disheartening. Like I say, whether you're trying to get out of the league or trying to stay in the league, it's just a disheartening factor where you almost not give up hope, but you're almost thinking everything's against you. So obviously it's not ideal, but sometimes it can have the opposite effect. It can galvanise people and they can all pull together, and you know, hopefully that's the case.
Bostic Premier, Folkestone went down at Brightling Sea, but Tunbridge made a back-to-back wins with a 4-3 success at Bishop Stortford. Margate battled against the 10 men of Leaders Haringey, we've already said, but undone by that late goal. We'll move quickly on. After Wednesday's trip to Lewis, Gate host Leverhead on Saturday. Tunbridge meet Haringey while Folkestone take on Kingstonian. Ashford's near-perfect record under Tommy Warrilow continued with a 7-0 thrashing of bottom side Greenwich in Bostic South East. Leaders Cray Wanderers are 10 points clear after beating VCD 3-1, while new Sittingbourne boss Chris Lynch saw his charges defeated 4-0 at Ramsgate in his first match in charge. Semi-final draw for the Kent Senior Trophy will see Chatham host Hollands and Blair in a Medway derby, while Beckenham entertain St Peter. The latter won a penalty shootout 11-10 at Tunbridge Wells on Saturday, following a 3-3 draw. In Southern Counties East, Corinthian took over at the top of the Premier Division following a 2-1 success at AFC Croydon. I know we've got a few quickfire questions to come very shortly, Franny, but I just wanted to pick up on one or two other things that you spoke about earlier. I know one thing that does intrigue me is the role of agents. And you said before, so you had an agent. At what point did you get rid of your agent, for want of a better word? But when was you not being influenced by agents in that respect? And do you think there's too many in the non-league game?
Yeah, I mean, it was as soon as I came out of the Football League, my contract with my agent expired, and I think there was no need for me to continue with it, really. Yeah, it is something that, I mean, I think higher up the pyramid, I understand it a bit better. I think an agent helping you get into the Football League and dealing with a professional contract. But for me, there's far too many players playing at sort of, you know, steps 4 or 5 of non-league football. And their agents helping them get a move one league up. I see absolutely no point in it, to be honest. But they are what they are, and there's plenty of them in the game. Like I say, if they help players get into league football, then so be it.
I think maybe if you had a more active agent back in the day, you might have got that move higher up.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly it was my downfall. But, like I say, I'm one of those who like to think that your football gets you your move. If you're playing well and you're doing the right things on the pitch, it doesn't matter what somebody's saying to you in the ballroom.
And also the role of 3G pitches. I mean, you're playing on one now at Margate, you've played on one at Maidstone, and you don't seem to have any obvious injury concerns from playing on them. I mean, how do you find them?
I think there's a massive difference between the good and the bad of them. I've played on some very good ones. Fortunately, Maidstone and Margate, we've got two really good ones there. But I've played on some poor ones as well. And there is a difference, and I understand why players and managers complain about them, but you can't generalise them, because like I say, it's the same as grass. You get good ones, you get bad ones, and the bad ones, you do wake up the next morning feeling like you've been hit by a train.
Just a couple of quickfire questions before we let you go. Who maybe has been the toughest opponent that you faced over the years, you know, a centre-half maybe?
I always felt the toughest centre-half I played against was Kenny Clark when he was at Chelmsford and Ipswich. He was quick, strong, aggressive, and I basically never seen him score against him.
What about on your side, a favourite strike partner or someone that you played alongside?
Jay May would be my... I mean, I think I've played with Jay at must be 4 or 5 different clubs now. I played with him at Tunbridge when I was playing. I played with him at Maidstone when we had the success last year with Margate. Hastings, I played with Jay. So I'd say Jay, consistently throughout my career, has probably brought the best out of me.
When there's someone that you get on so well with and you play so well with, will that even kind of influence maybe if you go and join a particular club because you know that they're there or vice versa?
Yeah, I think definitely. I think not even necessarily just players you play with in your area of the pitch. People in the change room you get on well with. There's plenty of factors. But yeah, I joined Margate firstly from Hastings because I knew a lot of the boys in the change room, James Rogers, people like that. So that's a massive factor, yeah.
A couple about your teammates at Margate. Who picks up the most fines?
Possibly Alex Flisher.
What's Flish been up to then?
He's late a fair bit for training. Gets picked up a lot on that. He likes a bit of food, so he's quite often caught eating when he shouldn't be. But yeah, probably there's actually it's quite a good bunch down there. And like I say, we've got such a small squad. It's hard to find people doing things wrong.
Who takes charge of the music before or after a game, and what gets played?
It's quite often one of the younger boys. It's always been Dave Martin. Unfortunately, he sits next to me in the changing room, so I get a bit of a say in it as well.
Okay, and what's on your playlist?
I like a bit of 80s and 90s, to be honest with you, which the young boys absolutely hate. So I'll get a bit of stick for that. But
presumably that means you only play it all the more.
Exactly that. And I like to think now I've got the other side of 30, I get more of a say in it as well.
Educational role for the youngsters.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, you mentioned going the other side of 30, but in terms of playing career, you've still got years ahead of you. You know, you still feel fit and feel able to do a job for a
few years. Yeah, I like to think so. I mean, I don't turn 32 until the end of the season. So far, touch wood, I've played every league game this season. So I feel fit, feel fresh. Fortunate enough to not have picked up too many injuries in recent years. So I'd like to think I can carry on going, yeah.
You still enjoy it as much as you did before?
Yeah, I think that's the main thing now. I think as soon as you get towards your late 20s, it is about enjoying your football. As soon as you stop enjoying it, there's plenty of players at 27 pack it in, but as long as you're enjoying your football, you keep on playing.
Great stuff, Franny. I've really enjoyed the chat. I hope you have it too. Thanks very much for coming in. I really appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who's listened this week. Don't forget you can subscribe on Audio Boom and iTunes, and keep up to date with all the latest sports stories throughout the week on our website at kentonline.co.uk.
The KM Football Podcast. All the latest reaction and analysis from the KM sports team. Listen every week and click subscribe on iTunes.